Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to be talking about primarily about what we'd like to see in reports for eligibility recommendations, what is associated with that recommendation, what is required for our review. But we're also going to start with some basic housekeeping things that we have seen over the last year or so where reports are less than stellar and could use some QA QC on our end, and we want to give it to you all at once. So as I said, I am Mary Ellen. I am the Cultural Resources Compliance Manager at SHPO. My archaeology staff includes Erin Davis, Caroline Klavaha, and Casey Miller. And then we work with Bill Collins, the historian, and Susan Lawson, the SHPO architect. So the SHPO archaeologist is the primary contact for all reviews, even if the report includes the built environment. So if you have questions, direct them primarily to your SHPO architect, your SHPO archaeologist, unless the architect or historian directly corresponds. So the historian or architect will review the built environment portions of reports and sign off on eligibility determinations, although official signatures on letters may be and usually are by the archaeological compliance specialist. We'd like to make sure everybody is aware that SHPO staff do not possess the knowledge and expertise of tribes. As such, we need to be informed of tribal concerns as early as possible in consultation. And we strongly encourage federal and state agencies to include tribal perspectives in all scopes of work for the identification and evaluation of historic properties. Caroline?
Hello, everyone. So we're going to start with some housekeeping. The current reporting guidance is found on our website. Much of this guidance was developed in collaboration with the Arizona State Museum staff. Some of it is agency specific, like the FCC pole installations, and it relies heavily on what is required for review under Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. You might be interested to know that at the beginning of this year, we have had a four-way chat going on between the compliance specialists where we pose questions to one another, and we use this information to be consistent in our responses to agencies and consultants. Some of what we have commented on are the use of current SHPO, ASM, and or agency guidance. Much of SHPO's survey report guidance was developed in collaboration with ASM, and it's available on our website and on ASM's website. Make sure that you only cite the guidance that you are using. If you're using ASM site criteria, write it out. And don't say that you conduct research at SHPO when we generally don't have anything. If you contact us, use personal communication and the date. Next is correct identification of applicable regulations. Don't put them all down if they're not all applicable. Think carefully about what the nexus for your project is, if it's state, federal, or private, and what the land ownership is. Use the correct terminology, especially regarding federal language where it applies. If you have a project that is on both federal or that is both a federal and state nexus, use the federal language, such as undertaking and area of potential effects, instead of project and project area. Use respectful terminology and no site names. Use the term refuse or discard pile rather than trash, for example. See ASM for the list. We will be getting this link to our website as well. In coordination with some tribes, ASM has a guidance document for respectful terminology for discussion of human remains. SHPO requests that reports adhere to this list. Next is legible and detailed site maps. Before the use of tablets, we would get site maps where you could actually see the outline of features, not just an X marking the spot. We think that technology is sufficiently advanced that digital maps should once again be able to depict features in scale. So please check your, or also check your reports to make sure that figure compression has not altered the quality of the map. And there should be no blurry areas. We would also like to see complete site descriptions per guidance documents. And that will is something that we'll discuss in the following slides. And then finally, QAQC. This QAQC is your job, it's not ours. We'd like to think that agencies are looking at the reports, but they're usually busy like us, and the level of detail is probably not 100%. So we focus on what we need to see in the report that demonstrates high professional standards and gives us the information necessary for our concurrence or determination of site eligibility. We will not hold up a project if we have sufficient information to concur with a finding of effect, but we will ask for report revisions when necessary.
I forget the rest of that. Mm-hmm. I meant to cross that out and I forgot.
Okay.
So again, the point of going over this stuff is that there are a lot of consultants submitting to us, a lot of new people. We don't recognize everybody's name, so we're assuming they're more recently in the field and they're not getting the proper guidance internally, or they're not looking at the SHPO guidance. So we are just bringing this to your attention and ask you to take a second look at where things stand. We know how everybody gets slacks over time. Things morph into, oh, we did it this way for this project, so we're going to continue doing it this way. And maybe that was an exception. So stick with the guidance when necessary.
Okay, this is me. This is Erin Davis. Hello. Hope everybody's doing well. Common things to look for during your QAQC are artifact counts. This is in the guidance online. Estimate the number or range of artifacts for the entire site and each artifact concentration. We want those separate numbers. For instance, 1,000 to 1,500, not thousands, which could be 2,000, could be 50,000. I don't know. Or a few, which could be one, could be two, you know, could be 10. I don't know. So make those a little more clear. Provide an exact count if artifacts appear to be under 100. And if you use the terms high density, low density, et cetera, define the terms, define it in terms of artifacts per square meter. Feature identifications, inscriptions. You don't need to write out a paragraph for each feature. If it's over three, just put it in a table. That's absolutely fine. Please include the metrics, the materials of the feature, and any associated artifacts. And feature photos are necessary. Just one is fine, but we need to have a good idea of what this feature actually looks like. It's very hard to tell sometimes through descriptions. Previously recorded sites, do not go overboard on this. You need the original recording summary with citations and the current description of what it looks like now, if it is different. Please put in the changes in condition, description, the boundaries, and if there are none, please explicitly state so. So we have no question about it. When you're assessing sites that have previously been determined ineligible, there's really no need to go and re-record every piece of glass that's out there or whatever, unless you disagree or think that they were completely wrong in their assessment, and then you need to do a re-recording, that's fine too. But don't waste your time if you don't need to for something that's already been determined ineligible. For sitemaps, if nothing has changed, you do not need to make a new sitemap. You're more than welcome to put the previous sitemap with a citation into your report and indicate that that's what it still looks like. That's absolutely fine. For the built environment, please summarize all findings in the report, even if you're using the historic in-use structure forms or historic inventory property forms, because those may separate from the report, and then we'll have no clue as to what was there for future researchers. So please include a description as well as the form at the end.
And the historic in-use structure forms are available online. When we put this up, I'll include the website link for that. And then you can always contact our office for the historic property inventory forms from Bill Collins.
I can take this one too.
Sure.
For sitemaps, these are some of the real basic things that we need to have. We need to have at least one contour with an elevation. We need the data, whether it's real or just a GPS point from where the UTMs were recorded. We don't want the site just out in space on a piece of paper. All artifacts and artifact concentrations, features that are called out in the text should be shown on the map. And disturbance and natural features discussed in the text should also be shown on the map. Essentially, if you're talking about it in the text, please put it on the map.
And finally, vice versa, if it's on the map, you should be talking about it in the text.
Yeah, that's true, vice versa. And as Caroline indicated, please check that final PDF. We get a lot of ones that just really look horrible because they've been compressed so much and you can't actually even see what the features are, or read the feature label. Thank you.
Multi-component site, and this has come up a lot this last year because we're all seeing it in our reports. And we want to remind you that multi-component is not a site type. It's a descriptor of what that you have a physical manifestation of at least two temporally or culturally distinct occupations or uses that cover the same space on the landscape, with each component meeting the definition of a site for SHPO purposes. Although ASM's position differs in that it is all one site, meaning the combined assemblage equals a site. If we get reports that have adherence to that definition, that's fine, and we will just address eligibility recommendations regardless for individual components. So basically, this is a survey level, so we're only asking you to do the most recognizable uses observed during survey, and usually that tends to be prehistoric, historic. If you've got information that says this is archaic and historic and you want to go there, or archaic and late classic, that's fine too, but you've got to be able to back it up. And we're not really concerned at the survey level, especially for the smaller surveys. When you do evaluations, do not state, regardless of how you put this together, do not state that one component contributes or not to the eligibility of the other. The components are evaluated individually. And that's how we enter them into our database.
All right, cultural affiliation and temporal affiliations. So number one, do not leave the information blank on your site description or in the SRSF. For cultural affiliation, please use the archaeological or ancestral affiliations, such as Huhukam, or such as Hohokam or ancestral Huhukam. Use terms such as Paleo-Indian, Paleo-American, Paleo-Archaic, or Archaic. If you're using any of these terms, please be consistent and don't switch between like Paleo-Indian and Paleo-American. So other cultural affiliations or proto-historic, you should be using the affiliate or the local tribe or
the ancestral tribe generally.
The ancestral tribe. Under prehistoric or pre-contact, or please do not use prehistoric, pre-contact, or unknown by themselves. And if you're talking about Euro-American, please acknowledge that this characterizes the artifacts, which are usually mass-produced as associated with American culture and does not imply a particular ethnicity or cultural affiliation. And then with temporal affiliation, you must use a date range and relevant phase or period, or use unknown.
We prefer that you include the phase or period with a date range, not one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Some more, a little bit more about cultural affiliation. Regarding prehistoric, historic, or unknown, it is not useful for evaluating significance and eligibility of sites. Think about where your project is located and what cultural groups are affiliated prehistorically and historically. Use background research results and use the government-to-government consultation toolkit, tribal maps. For historic period sites, add a statement that the Euro-American cultural assignment for historic resources should not be taken to diminish the cultural diverse nature of group, culturally diverse nature of groups of people who have moved through this area during historic times. Identification of resources as Euro-American should not be meant to characterize users of the items that are being of particular ethnicity or of cultural affiliation.
We got this in a report recently and thought it was really something good to point out to everybody. if you know what the cultural affiliation is, like a, I can't even think of one, put it in. But in general, again, we're at the survey level and you may need archival research to get more specific than that. So this is what we're asking for.
Okay, submittals to SHPO. We are all electronic. We have a general email address, azshpo@azstateparks.gov. You should all be familiar with that, I hope. Please do not send us any hard copies unless specifically requested, because chances are we're not going to get them. The post office doesn't seem to think we exist. Note that we do have a mandated 30 calendar day review period. So we are supposed to get our review done within 30 calendar days. So please let us have our time. If you need something expedited, tell us that right up front and we will do our best to accommodate you. We encourage concurrent reviews with Tribes, ASM, and others, especially Tribes, if they can go, if your project has time, I'm talking to the agencies now, really encourage you to get the tribal perspective first. They are even more underfunded than we are and have staffing issues and could use a lot of time. But ASM has indicated they are open to and would prefer to have concurrent reviews also. And that way you get all your comments together and only have to make one revised report. Please don't resubmit that report and label as final until consultation has actually occurred. We may have revisions for you. And so therefore is not final until it's been reviewed by the agencies and SHPO. Please use a revised date for each submittal, so that we can keep track of which submittal is which and what is the most current. And finally, once that final review is done by ASM or whoever, please give us the final report that addresses all comments. Sometimes ASM does a review after ours and then they have comments, there's revisions and we are not aware of it and we have an outdated report in our files. So please do that, thank you.
Okay, we're going to stop here for any questions just on this general part of the information before we get into the heart of today's workshop. So if you have questions, please unmute yourself and raise your hand. And if not, we will just go on. I'll give you a couple of minutes to find the unmute button.
While that's happening, I did just want to say one other thing regarding electronic submittals. If you're resubmitting a report or information to us, please also send that to the AZ SHPO address as well so that it gets properly logged.
Thank you. We have a question here. How would you depict erosion disturbance on the site map? Just crosshatch an area where that disturbance is happening, whether it's natural or, you know, cement being dumped on a site, things like that. Just as long as, you know, you're discussing it in your text, show us where it is. Just a light crosshatch or something, gray it out. Eventually, you will have to address whether there are potentially significant resources still intact under the surface. So that's part of your integrity question as we get into the context and evaluation. Anything else on this part? We are really serious about having the reports come up to standard on this. For years, you know, we started off, every time a SHPO person starts, you know, we do detailed reviews and then finally we relax because we're used to seeing what's being written and we get into the groove of how people are reporting. And we're also aware that ASM has an extreme checklist for doing their reviews. And we tend to focus on the content of the eligibility and the context and all. So we are really going to start saying, revise the report to address these things. These are the ones that we've just addressed here in this past few minutes. They're routine. They should be easily caught in a QA/QC by the consultant. So if you get a report to revise at this point, don't think that we're just being petty. We've been telling everybody for years, this is what needs to be done. And now it's the time to pay the price, so to speak. Okay, doesn't look like any more questions.
Ryan has his hand up.
Oh, I didn't see that. Okay, go ahead, please.
Real quick on the maps, a lot of times we see that it's asking for UTM coordinates added, and we have it in the margins, but we'll still be asked to add actual UTM coordinates into the map, even though they're on the margins. Is that something that's going to change if we have UTM coordinates on the right and bottom margin of the map, or is that going to be like, hey, we want?
I'm on a conference call right now, but I'll come talk to you in just a minute then.
That was my question.
Erin, you want to get that one?
Ryan, are we saying that, or is ASM saying that?
As I was asking it, I realized that's probably an ASM answer ASM question.
Yeah, I think that pertains more to ASM since they're still plotting on paper maps and all that. I can ask ASM and send out an email about that. But at SHPO, no, we're fine with just the margins.
I think you had said something about a datum. I think that was part of the question. So we want to make sure we're consistent. And we will check to make sure we are consistent with ASM. Any other questions?
Hey, Mary Ellen,
mm-hmm.
Sylvia. Will there be anything addressing later on when there's a difference in what the online database has and what we have found? Because I don't want to go into the question if you're going to address it in a little bit.
No. We're not talking about ad site, if that's what you mean.
Okay. Yeah. So then I'll deal with that later. Thanks.
No, you can ask a question. I mean,
okay.
Here, it's fine.
Okay. So what it is when I find there's a difference within the online database, and particularly like for the dates that are recorded for something, since you specifically mentioned, make sure that your dates are going to be relevant to the culture that you're referring to. But in the online database, it'll have one range, and then it'll have a different range when it gets further into what's reported on there. When we're doing our tables, do you want both of those included, or do you want it to just pick like the most narrow one? Because I don't know if the narrow one is something that's been given by SHPO, or if the narrow one is something that has been added in by the recorders.
So were you talking about eligibility recommendations and determinations or something else?
Just talking about when it's describing cultural affiliation and the time period that it covers.
So that's all in the ASM ARO record and has nothing to do with SHPO. So
okay.
You need just to get the best information that you can.
Okay.
And if it's on the site card or if it's in the report, I mean, I'd go with what's in a report more than anything.
Okay. And same thing goes if we find that, because I've had several reports that I've turned in and have made mention that addresses are incorrect. It'll have avenue instead of street. And as we know in Phoenix, you know, the 75th mm-hmm. Street and 75th Avenue is 150 mm-hmm. blocks. So, I just need to just send them an email, I guess, then.
Yeah, that's all on AssSite and ARO.
All right. Well, we'll toss it back at them then. Thank you.
You're welcome. You should know for reference, AssSite has a great app coming out that will really help provide the recommendations and determinations for site eligibility. We are now the ones that are behind in getting the information into AssSite, and we're going to make a big push getting our data up to date this coming year so we can all be caught up around the same time. So we have a lot of backlog to do on site data entry, but we have an intern starting tomorrow. So we hope this will get moving along for the next jump into AssSite. Okay, we're gonna move on. So the framework for today's discussion on eligibility. Most archaeological investigations occur because of requirements that trigger Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. Approximately 70% of SHPO review is Section 106, 20% state act, and 10% non-mandated consultation. Typically, this includes federal land or money, permitting, such as the Army Corps of Engineer Clean Water Act and the like. Or, yeah, I said funding. In Arizona, we rely on ASM's definition of archaeological site, as well as projects, as well as specific land managing agency definitions. That agency's specific criteria, as mentioned earlier, should be specified in your report. If it's not ASM and it's a land managing agency, put it in. If it's private land, use ASM site definition. The identification of places, well, here I'll go back to the bulletin 36. Archaeological site is a National Register property defined as the place or places where the remnants of a past culture survive in the physical context that allows for the interpretation of these remains. Places of Traditional Ecological Knowledge, or TEKs, Traditional Cultural Properties, TCPs, sacred sites should be concurrently identified by descendant communities as part of the identification of historic properties, the first step in the Section 106 process, SHPO opinion. You should also know that Bulletin 38 on Traditional Cultural Properties is actually in review. The revised 10 years revised draft is out for review, and they hope to have something, some comments addressed by April next year. So the identification, as I mentioned, of TCPs, it can't just happen in consultation after survey. We've seen what tribal monitoring programs can contribute, and we, as I mentioned earlier, strongly encourage agencies to bring tribal perspectives into identification and evaluations of historic properties early on. Erin?
Oh, is that me? Okay.
I think so.
Sorry, I have to find my place. Okay, so in the Section 106 process, the second step is to identify historic properties. We're focusing on step two, identification and eligibility. We recommend that the agency coordinate with tribes and the archaeological consultant to have tribal members in the field at the same time as the archaeological survey, like Mary Ellen was just talking about. We cannot stress enough that ethnographic and TEK surveys should be part of the identification process, not a mitigation to resolve adverse effects. Agencies should inform SHPO of the efforts as part of the consultation process.
So yes, we were redundant, but this is how much we believe this needs to be done.
Yeah. So in addition to the use of the background research and historical maps that we all know, the archaeological field survey that we all know, we really recommend ethnographic survey, TEK surveys, and information as they can share it on traditional cultural properties. And yes, we do know that most tribes do not want to share that location, specific location information, but will share enough information to get an idea of what might need to be avoided. Okay, so historic context. This is not the same as identifying general themes such as chronology or subsistence, and we're not asking for a research design unless your survey is greater than 640 acres or as required by a land manager. Remember, land managers and agencies, they may have slightly different requirements, and just let us know that that's what their requirements are, and we will take that into account. Historic contexts are those patterns, themes, or trends in history or prehistory by which a specific occurrence, property, or site is understood and its meaning or significance within history is made clear. And the National Register in the Park Service has a lot of different bulletins that goes into depth about explaining all these. So we're not just making this up. Historic context is the way to actually adequately evaluate a site. Context provide the background necessary to understand why a resource may be significant. An historic context document identifies and explains in detail those patterns, themes, or trends that apply within the resource's state. Historic context may be applied at the local, state, or national level of significance. So even if you're saying that something is eligible to the National Register, that doesn't necessarily mean it's nationally significant, because those three levels of significance exist: local, state, or national.
And up to this point, we've generally been inferring eligibility and significance based on the cultural histories that are provided. And sometimes there are little themes that are identified, but we're asking for the complete package moving forward. And this is not to say that if there's a project in place already and the scope of work is already identified that you need to switch gears, you go with what you've been tasked with already, but moving forward on new reports, this is what we're asking for. So these are some examples of the contexts on file at SHPA. They're on our website. Granted, many are old, but we have new information for some of them, like prehistoric water utilization and technology. But these are starting points. Again, remember that you must identify the period of significance to evaluate archaeological sites. So even if you have a site for which you don't have specific temporal information, you're looking under criterion D for a site's research potential. So you're taking these contexts and adapting them to the types of sites in your study area. And these are just a list of some of the ones that we have on our webpage. I think there's about 16 or so at least. The ones like cattle ranching and gold and silver mining, totally relevant still. Caroline?
All right. So the continuation of identification is to determine or in determining National Register eligibility is to look at the criteria or which archaeological sites should not just be evaluated under criterion D. We seem to forget that there are other criteria, so we should show them some love too. It is easier when you start evaluating significance under the relevant context. It might require additional research, and you may end up stating additional research is required to evaluate the site significance under criteria A, B, and C. And of course, you have to consider the aspects of integrity. Some obvious examples are homesteads and linear sites, or structures representing early electrification in an area. So remember A for event, B for people, and C for design and construction. And then criterion D for eligibility. It's everybody's favorite. So eligibility or criterion D eligibility, the quality of significance in American history, architecture, archaeology, engineering, and culture is present in district sites, buildings, structures, and objects that possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and that have yielded or may be likely to yield information important in prehistory or history. For more information, see bulletins 15 and 36. So today we're focusing on criterion D because most archaeological sites are assessed for significance and recommended eligible or not eligible under criterion D. We recognize that we are providing a Western science perspective and that tribes have knowledge and expertise that we do not possess, and we otherwise rely on the results of government-to-government consultation between agencies and tribes to acknowledge Indigenous perspectives. Again, we hope members of the...
Deleted.
Oh, yes. And yes, a site can be eligible and recommended, no further investigation necessary, so long as you're addressing the impacts. And what's the significant?
Oops, sorry.
So move on to aspects of integrity.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and do this. So there are seven aspects of integrity. I've heard people call them the seven dwarves, and I know there are other acronyms out there for them. Location is the place where the historic property was constructed or the place where the historic event occurred. Design is the combination of elements that create the form, plan, space, structure, and style of a property. Setting is the physical environment of a historic property, includes such elements as topographic features, open space, viewshed, landscape, vegetation, and artificial features. Materials are the physical elements that were combined or deposited during a particular period of time and in a particular pattern or configuration to form a historic property. Workmanship is the physical evidence of the labor and skill of a particular culture or people during any given period in history. Feeling, a property's expression of the aesthetic or historic sense of a particular period of time. An association, the direct link between an important historic event or person or and a historic property. Under criterion D, association, the strength of the association between the data and research questions is what's important. Aspects of integrity are not equally weighed, but you have to have at least one aspect for a site, aspect of integrity for a site to be recommended eligible. And yes, it's subjective, but the justification that you provide is what will help us with concurrence or not. So just a little bit of detail, what we're talking about here for aspects of integrity. Has the property been moved? Example of loss of integrity could be where a site, it could be a site where the artifacts have eroded down a slope. Design, a historic mining site that, that retains building foundations and equipment probably retains the integrity of design. If the building foundations have been demolished, the integrity of design has been compromised. Archaeological sites that are nominated or recommended eligible under criterion D may not often attain integrity of setting. It depends if they're located in a rural or urban setting. Materials. So if a site has adobe or masonry walls, discuss that aspect of integrity if you can at the survey level. And workmanship. Under criterion D, integrity of workmanship can be evaluated by the quality of the artifacts or the skill that would be necessary to construct features. The presence of diagnostic artifacts alone is not an indication of integrity of workmanship. I'll just leave that there. Let's see. Feeling. In order for an archaeological site to retain integrity of feeling, it must evoke the sense of the time the site was in use. This usually means an undisturbed environment as well as intact features. Association, a site that has an archaeological deposits that can help answer important research questions, retain integrity of association. Normally, we should have association and one other integrity aspect. Erin?
Okay, the steps for evaluating a site under criterion D. And National Register Bulletin 36 deals specifically with archaeological sites. I know a lot of the bulletins tend to be kind of building heavy. So I suggest that you look at Bulletin 36 if you want to just talk about archaeology. This is the order. These are the five steps. One, identify the sites, data sets or categories of archaeological, historical, or ecological information. What is the data potential? What are data sets are you going to get? Two, identify the historic context, as we just discussed. Three, identify the important research questions that the site's data can be expected to address. Four, consider the integrity of the site and evaluate the data in terms of their potential and known ability to answer the research question. And five, identify the important information an archaeological study has yielded or is likely to yield. Points three and four are required to be addressed in surveys that are 640 acres or more. That's an infamous research design. In smaller surveys, this information is usually implicit in the discussion about historical significance, and it does not need to be called out specifically. It circles back to the overarching historical context.
So in summary, it should be said, let's go back to that last slide. This is actually for nominating a site to the National Register, and we are applying it to our survey level of information. So there is some leeway there. In sum, the evaluation process for all criteria categorize the property, determine the appropriate historic context. There could be multiple the property represents. Determine whether the property is significant under the National Register criteria. Determine if the property represents a type usually excluded from the National Register criteria. These are called criteria considerations, and they're not common for archaeological sites. And determine whether the property retains integrity. If it doesn't retain integrity, it shouldn't be eligible. So at the conference, what we did was an interactive session where we provided some culture histories from different areas around the state, a couple of different site descriptions, and we talked about what you could take out of that culture history if you had, for example, this kind of site showing in your report. So what we're trying to get out here is that we don't want you to cut and paste your culture history into the archaeological report, survey report, but we want you to use it as the basis for your historic context discussion. So for this example, it's an artifact scatter with features. It's identified as Hohokam Classic period. The background research showed that there are at least three Hohokam sites consisting of canals and field houses in the 1 mile radius. The site location is on the Salt River floodplain, and the culture history that I am taking the rest of my discussion from will be my Phoenix base in Hohokam. And I'm phrasing it this way because I've worked in the private sector, and I know we all have those boilerplated culture histories that we pull from each time. And while we've gotten better about not including a 30-page culture history that has nothing to do with the research and the results of the survey, they're still not generally relevant. So we're trying to get away from them and only pull the pieces that are necessary to address eligibility and significance. So with this information in mind and from my culture history, I'm going to identify a local historic context statement, such as Hohokam irrigation agriculture within canal system 2, Phoenix Basin, circa AD 1150 to 1450 Placid period. You know, as much information as you can get. I'll show you an example later where my discussion is actually pulled directly from a culture history. So we're not asking you to throw them all away. You're going to need them. And I'm betting that you can go through all your culture histories now and identify, based on your own previous experience, a number of different contexts that might be relevant in any given area that you're working in for those kinds of sites. Here's another example. It's an artifact scatter. It's in Northern Arizona, the Northern Sanawa. We didn't put the phase down, unfortunately. Surrounding sites include artifact scatters representing resource procurement sites and small one or two room habitations. So again, the culture history is just the point of reference there. Northern Sanawa, oops. Resource procurement and processing among the Northern Sanawa between AD 825 and 1300 on the Colorado Plateau in the vicinity of present-day Flagstaff. The historic context statement identifies the culture, the time period of significance, and the theme that you are looking at. So a lot of our reports, they include a general theme that says prehistoric subsistence and settlement patterns in the Phoenix Basin. What's wrong with that is that it's not specific enough. Yes, we're inferring based on the other information you provided that you're talking about Hohokam, but we want you to call it out at this point. And since you're not going to have the culture history in the document, you're going to have a little bit of discussion later that addresses that. So in your site description, what we're asking for is going to be very limited. And I'll show you that in a minute. These are just a few other examples. Ranching, Euro-American cultural affiliation in the Tano Basin, you know, kinds of sites. This is all based on information that you are pulling anyway. This is nothing really extra that you're having to do. It's maybe reorganizing some thought processes. So we have an existing cultural context, cattle ranching in Arizona during the modern era, 1945 to 1970. And we just added in the Tano Basin. We wanna make sure we have that geographic area. Okay, here we don't have a specific cultural group identified. And I think it's sufficient when we get to historic period because at the survey level, you may not know other than Euro-American or so just saying Arizona is okay. And last example, an artifact scatter with features, also Euro-American, middle to late historic period. surrounded by other sites of similar nature. And the culture history should have said Euro-American, actually. So here, silver mining in the 1870s to 1900 in the foothills of the Superstition Mountains near modern day Superior. Again, you have to have this temporal component listed. Erin, Caroline, one of you.
I can go. So summary and recommendations discussion. So in this section, you should summarize the survey findings, discuss the historic context used to evaluate the sites. Please note that there may be more than one historic context depending on the type of sites you're finding. Discuss the sites as they relate to each other, offer eligibility recommendations, address the project's specific effects on sites, and offer recommendations for avoidance or further work, such as archival work, eligibility testing, and data recovery.
So one of the examples that I was talking about for my HOCOM context statement. So I have the first sentence, what we were asking you to do is put all this in the end of your discussion, rather than including each time a copied paragraph into each of your similar types of sites. So in this case, I pulled the rest of this statement is from a culture history that we were given and provided access to just for this purpose. So we're not asking for a lot here, but you do need to include a little bit of a discussion. And then in the end, you want to say that sites X, Y, and Z retain integrity of the association and are recommended eligible under criterion D. And you may have other sites that do not retain integrity and they are not eligible for that same historic context. And then the recommendations example, I think everybody's pretty good on that. We usually recommend phased data recovery. And that's fine, but when we get into a federal project that has an adverse effect, we are looking at creative types of mitigation. We don't want to just do data recovery because it's not what all tribes want. It's not always necessary based on the information that's already out there. We could look at other benefits to the public and tribes, educational opportunities, interpretive things as well. So don't be afraid to put alternative suggestions in there. We can't always think of them on our own. Okay, and then I wanted to do a little bit of a discussion about cultural landscapes, because in our consultations, what we're seeing in responses from tribes is that they have concerns about the cultural landscape and they're not being provided sufficient information to make a call about whether or not to them it's historically significant if they didn't have this information before. So we are not asking for an evaluation of a traditional cultural landscape or an identification of a cultural landscape with boundaries. We ask simply that you consider the temporal and spatial distribution of the identified sites and isolates, and including from your class one, and write a brief summary. It's more of a wrap up of the research results. And the definition of a cultural landscape is here defined as a geographic area, including both cultural and natural resources and the wildlife or domestic animals therein, associated with a historic event, activity, or person, or exhibiting other cultural or aesthetic values. Just think about the other information that you're putting in your report. You have the environmental context to pull from, you have the geologic formations, you have the landforms. So you've already got the background information you need to discuss the cultural landscape for your project area. Now you just want to say, where are these sites located? And are there any obvious patterns? We're not looking for a lot of detail. So here's an example for a discussion. The survey resulted in the documentation of 10 sites and 150 IOs. We want you to address site density for the project as a whole. Specifically, this works best for a continuous APE, We realize that sometimes projects have a lot of small different survey areas and it may not be easy to do this. And in that case, it's understood. So where are the sites and IOs located relative to the landform and topographic features? If you have both prehistoric and historic sites and IOs, break it down and show the distribution on separate maps. That's what we're finding the tribes are looking for. Are there temporal differences in site location, different landforms, near to different elevations, stuff like that? What do the results suggest about intensity of land use over time? As basic as you can, we're not asking again for any in-depth detailed discussion. And then in our last session this morning, we had somebody ask if we could do a report outline. And I put, and this is not what they were asking for, but I thought I would put it out there for you to see what we're saying about what should be included in your report. So for surveys of less than 640 acres, and I will reiterate that SHPO and ASM did consult, and it is okay not to include the cultural history in reports of less than 640 acres. So your basic sections are here. What's missing is the cultural history. What's added is this site summary. We want you to discuss sites under relevant historic contexts, like the example that I gave you. Then talk about the landscape consideration and recommendations. If you have a survey that's 640 acres or more, SHPO has adapted ASM standards for their surveys for all projects. So your outline is in more detail. You have the culture history. You have an option here to identify the relevant historical context that will be used for site evaluations. You can put it here, or you could put it at the end. And you do need your research design with research questions and your field methods, your survey results, your site eligibility summary relative to historic context, your research results and discussion. And here you would include a consideration of the cultural landscape in its broadest sense, and then your management recommendations. So it seems like a lot, but the reality is you have all the information in hand already, because I know you all have culture histories. We are asking you to rethink how you put it all together. I think that is the main message that we have to share, and that we are no longer going to accept the eligibility recommendations unless they are thoughtfully presented. When we get to your site description, we are asking only that you put in a recommendation of eligibility and then the theme, the overarching theme, and that whether or not it retains integrity or not. So we're not asking for that discussion under individual site discussions. Okay, I think that's all we have. And I will open it up to questions. The PowerPoint will be available to participants as well as the audio. We're going to clean up the PowerPoint a little bit. We've found a couple of inaccurate information as we were going through just now. Question from Matt Basham. Does SHPO still agree and endorse the Garrison era eligibility and integrity matrix? No, it doesn't do well for archaeology. That's the reason we don't do it. You can use it for the built environment, but archaeologists focus on too limited of information if we use it for that purpose. So, and we just brought this up to Catherine recently, and she does not support it. If you want to come off mute and ask questions, just raise your hands. You're happy to answer.
I think Dave is trying to get our attention.
I can't see anything.
I just wanted to ask about the integrity of feeling for prehistoric sites and if that's really appropriate to use anymore, or have any of the tribal groups had any pushback on that? Because it seems kind of carryover of colonialism for us to be like, oh, this feels, you know, like whatever. I mean, I feel personally wrong trying to ascribe the integrity of feeling to anything prehistoric.
I would agree with you. I don't see much use of it. I wouldn't expect to see much use of it for prehistoric and ancestral sites of any kind. That's up for the tribes to determine if that's the association. And hopefully what we're looking at in the not so distant future is a way to obtain some information. Like, you know, we get the reports, we get the letters from the agencies, and they have determinations of eligibility and we concur or not. What they don't provide us with is the tribal perspective on those determinations of eligibility. And we'd like to be able to ultimately have a database that at least we can add that information in the tribal perspective. I mean, limit it to what the tribal perspective is. We don't have to say anything else, but just acknowledge that that is there. And that will help us with future research moving forward as well. And I have talked to some of the tribes about that already.
Thank you.
Don't be shy. Angela?
Yeah, so in addressing aspects of integrity, do you want us to note those that are present, or do you want us to also explain those that are absent or have been impacted?
I think there are some land managers that require everything in terms of, we want you to say that it's not eligible under A, B, and C, and it has no integrity under these. SHPO's preference is just to acknowledge what is relevant. It doesn't mean that that's the only context and the only aspect of integrity that is appropriate or relevant to your site, but it's really all we need. We encourage you to be more thoughtful and identify multiple contexts that a site could be eligible under, but that's also more for the research component, I think, of the larger surveys where a research design is going to be implemented. So we're not too concerned as long as we have some information.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? If you have any comments, after the fact, feel free to reach out to us. Any more questions, we are happy to answer them. If you don't know by now, our specialists review for specific agencies, and each of us is happy to help you for those agencies that we review. If you have a general question, you can always just send it to azshipo@azstateparks.gov, and one of us will pick it up. But we are here to provide technical assistance and advice. We are here to raise professional standards where it's necessary. We appreciate the good work that many consultants do without us having to say anything. And there are good consultants out there. I'm not saying everybody's bad. We're just saying that it's time to make the next hurdle and be up there with professional standards across the nation.